Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Antos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We would like to greet our new affiliate, WMQM AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee. That's a 50,000-watt station in Memphis that's going to be bringing Mark Antos, America, and the Republic Broadcasting Network to a much wider conventional radio audience in the American South in the days ahead. We are joined today by Michael Rivero of WhatReallyHappened.com. If you've not seen this site, you need to see it. It is an absolutely outstanding news site, both in terms of contemporary information as well as what it has archived in regard to some of the seminal political events of our time in the last 50 years that, taken in the aggregate, suggest that something is really wrong. And something is wrong, folks. And to the extent that we find out about this through RBN and through the American Free Press and through WhatReallyHappened.com, we then have to ask ourselves what we do as responsible citizens in the days ahead, given the fact that we are moving in the direction of a police state. Michael, before the break, we were talking a little bit about Paul Wolfowitz and speaking about the way in which his real crimes have been ignored. I'm paraphrasing what Michael Collins Piper has said about him. His real crime, presumably, has been to be a part of this cabal that started this illegal war for all of the wrong reasons. Michael Collins Piper underscores as well that in his judgment, the real crime of Wolfowitz is that he's a spy for Israel. What's your take on this?
I'm absolutely in agreement there, and this gets back to what I was saying before the break about safe scandals versus unsafe scandals, because the media can talk about his holy socks and licking his comb and his girlfriend safely, because it's just Paul Wolfowitz you're talking about. But if you start getting into that whole mechanism of how we got into the war and the scale with which Israeli intelligence has penetrated and controls our own government, then you get into an issue of basically a threat to the system as a whole. And, you know, the American people, if they really become aware that their government is under the control of a foreign entity, at some point there's going to be a breaking point where the American people are saying, well, I'm not going to keep on paying taxes to these people if they're sending the money over to this foreign government, if they're sending our kids to die in wars that this other government wants. You know, why should we support a government that is working for somebody else? And certainly Wolfowitz is right at the core of this, what we call the PNAC crew, the Project for the New American Century. It's really the same names keep turning up over and over again. And a lot of this hinges very much on the Israeli spy scandal, the AIPAC spy scandal. And to basically recap on that, because it is going to trial here in June, you have this group of Israeli spies operating out of the American-Israel Political Action Committee, and they were working with a gentleman inside the Pentagon Office of Special Plans named Larry Franklin, who has already been sentenced to jail for his part of this whole espionage ring. And what the part of the story that was really being missed or ignored by the mainstream media was not that information was going from the Pentagon through AIPAC to Israel, but that disinformation was coming back from Israel through AIPAC into the Pentagon Office of Special Plans, and from there went to the White House to basically justify the attack on Iraq, to basically build a case for Iraq being a threat to the United States, which it never really was. And we're seeing the same players. They've changed offices, but they're still playing the same game and have been playing the same game with Iran, trying to create this sense of urgency that Iran's power station somehow will magically mutate into a weapons program that the United States must deal with.
When we come back, I'm going to ask Michael Rivero to expand upon that theme of Israel's role in the beginning of this war. You can find his website at whatreallyhappened.com. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on RBN. Stay tuned.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Michael Rivero of What Really Happened, which you can find at whatreallyhappened.com. Michael, speaking of what really happened as it relates to 9/11, I had a gentleman on the show yesterday, Michael Cutler, who is on mainstream media sometimes, MSNBC. I've seen him on Fox. I think I've seen him on CNN. And he is an illegal immigration expert. Has said a lot of things about illegal immigration that I would agree with. And on that portion of what he talked about yesterday, for the most part, I thought he was right on. But Michael Cutler, on the other hand, which is his right to do so, I give my guests the opportunity to speak their minds, nonetheless, seemed to affirm the establishment position on 9/11 and what happened. What do you think happened on 9/11? And if I might interject a little bit of slant on this at this juncture, to what extent do you think that there was an Israeli connection to 9/11?
Well, I don't think there's any question that there was an Israeli connection to 9/11, and it's documented by two facts. Three facts. The first is, of course, the arrest of the Mossad agents who were dancing and cheering and high-fiving each other. They're referred to as the dancing Israeli on the net, and it was revealed that at least two of them were Mossad agents. The other issue is that connected with that case, when Carl Cameron did his four-part story on Israeli spying shortly after 9/11, U.S. government official admitted that there was evidence linking those arrested Mossad agents with 9/11, but that evidence had been classified by the United States government. So obviously there is something being hidden there. And then third and final, there was at least one very clearly documented case of Israeli interests getting an advance warning of the attack. And this relates to a company called Odigo, which provides the backbone services for instant messaging systems all around the world, and especially in the United States. It's an Israeli-owned company, but they have offices in New York, or had offices in New York, only a few blocks from the World Trade Center. And they received a warning of the coming attacks while the airplanes were still on the ground before they'd even taken off. This was very clearly documented. The IP that sent the warning was tracked and given to the FBI, and the FBI, of course, simply stopped the investigation at that point. So there's definitely an Israeli aspect to it, and by virtue of the U.S. government classifying information, I think it was basically a joint operation where the group inside the United States centered around the Project for the New American Century wanted to have a new Pearl Harbor, that's their words, not mine, to basically kick off the blueprint laid out in rebuilding America's defenses. So this gets back to the issue of what's called a false flag attack, and that is you have Group A commit an act of terror or war against Group B and then plant the blame on Group C to get B and C fighting each other and killing each other off, and then Group A gets to basically own everything that's left over. And this is nothing new. This is a very, very old tactic. It's been used throughout history. And to cite a couple of examples, back in the 50s in Egypt, there were American and British assets were being bombed, and evidence abounded to lay the blame at Egyptians and Arabs as the culprits. And then one of the bombs went off prematurely, and the police actually caught one of the bombers, and it turned out to be an Israeli agent. And ultimately, the Minister of Defense named Levon had to resign over this, and that's why it's called the Levon Affair to this day. When the King David Hotel was bombed, it was done by Israeli agents dressed up as Arabs. A former Mossad agent, Victor Ostrovsky, has related a story of how Ronald Reagan was tricked into bombing Libya by fake radio messages that were sent out claiming, purporting to be from the Libyan leader ordering terrorist attacks against America around the world. And that's how we wound up bombing Libya and attempting to kill Gaddafi. There are a lot of people who believe that the USS Liberty was another Israeli false flag, that had they succeeded in sinking the ship and killing all the crew on board, that their plan was to frame Egypt for the crime, to trick the Americans into the war against Egypt on Israel's side. USS Cole may have been another similar false flag attack, and of course, as faith in the official version of 9/11 continues to deteriorate, the primary assumption is that this was a false flag attack to enrage Americans to supporting a war in Afghanistan and Iraq and eventually Iran and eventually Saudi Arabia. So certainly who stands to gain from that? Those are the people who are the likely participants.
Yes, we've come full circle then to this whole question of desperation. If in fact what we are looking at here, both with 9/11 and the aftermath, is essentially a situation where the Zionist lobby and the neoconservatives connected to the Zionist lobby are the driving force behind these events and these developments. And if these folks and if the Bush and Cheney people become increasingly desperate over their precarious political perch at this juncture, is it possible that irrationality will replace rationality when it comes to attacking Iran? In other words, rationality dictates, and morality for that matter, that we not do this. It certainly, in my judgment, would be a crime. It certainly would be counterproductive in terms of the interest of the average American. Now, having said that, if attacking Iran in a preemptive fashion becomes a continued part of the total agenda of the PNAC people, and the Zionists and the Bush and Cheney administration and the oil lobby, if all of this is involved, and if they decide out of desperation that they must go to the well again with a false flag incident in order to justify a monstrous act like this, which is what attacking Iran would be, what can we possibly imagine could be the character of the false flag incident to stir up the American people once again?
Well, when you're doing these kind of false flag attacks, they have to have a psychological shock value that so rattles people that they're willing to basically accept what they're going to be told in the immediate aftermath. And because we've already seen the jetliner and building situation, I think if out of desperation a new false flag attack is carried out, it's going to have to be something far more spectacular, possibly even involving a nuclear weapon, which they could say, see, we told you Iran was building nuclear weapons in their power plant. We were right. You were wrong. Now shut up. Here's your rifle and go invade those people for us. Again, it would be a target of great symbolic value. And maybe even without going the nuclear route, something like dropping the Golden Gate Bridge into San Francisco Harbor. Because it's important with these false flag attacks, targets of real military value aren't as effective as targets with which people have a deep emotional link. And that's why you would have, like the World Trade Towers or the Statue of Liberty or the Golden Gate or something like that would be the very, very visible target. Now, there is an alternative scenario, and that would be a staged biological attack on multiple seas, because this would have the added benefit that it would be so scary to people and an immediate threat no matter where you lived in the country that people might not be willing to take the chance that it was a lie, even though their common sense tells them that it probably is. They would be so scared of whatever the germ was doing that they would say, okay, save me, save me. Plus, it would justify nationwide martial law. And again, we were talking about shutting down the internet by saying, well, they still have another 100 vials of these germs and they're coordinating over the internet. Therefore, we have to shut the internet down until we can round them all up. And at that point, the doors would start getting kicked in and, dissidents would get rounded up as possible terror suspects. We've already seen that in Guantanamo and these various other prisons where Bush has simply grabbed people that really hadn't done anything, but they get grabbed and thrown in jail and held in jail indefinitely. Anyway, some of them are being kept in jail without trial, without access to an attorney for no other reason than they've become an embarrassment to the government, and the government just doesn't want them out there doing press conferences. So, with all of these dictatorial powers that Bush has already acquired, he certainly has the means to carry a plan like this forward. The big issue is, how desperate are they? Are they desperate to enough to try and roll the dice again? And there is one factor that causes me concern. Putting this nation on this path to war, we're in a situation where if we lose the war, as you said in the first part of the show, it's going to destroy the credibility of the government. And more than that, it will leave this country in a serious economic crisis because Bush has been borrowing, spending money like crazy on all of these war plans with the expectation that we'd repay these loans or at least have the political leverage to defer the loans by controlling what's left of the world's easily reachable oil. If they fail this, the U.S. is going to be saddled with a crushing, crushing debt load. It will not have control of the oil to sell to make money. It will not have control of the oil to use as political leverage on those countries to which we owe the money. And so for a lot of people in the government right now, they're in a situation of they must win or lose control of the country entirely.
Let's pick up on that, Michael, when we come back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with the amazing Michael Rivero of WhatReallyHappened.com. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. World War III? Rising fuel prices? Financial collapse? Trucker strike? North American Union? Our world has become a very fragile place, and we need to be prudent and plan ahead. Don't wait for impending crisis to become reality. Then it will be too late. Stoves and More wants to help give you freedom from the systems of the world. If the grid is down and fossil fuels are not available to you, how would you heat your home, cook your food, and heat your water? People, we need to be more independent and able to take care of ourselves in a natural disaster, political crisis, or financial crisis. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you the independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. With the right application, you'll be able to use these stoves all year long, not just during the winter months. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at stovesandmoreonline.com. Food, water, and a wood cook stove are keys to your survival in a crisis. Take action!
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are joined by Michael Rivero of WhatReallyHappened.com. I will later be posting information on Michael's website at Breaking All the Rules News, and at some point we'll add it to my links page at MarkDankoff.com. I think it's that important a site. Michael, before the break, we were talking about the ramifications of an American defeat in Iraq, principally in the area of debt, that with the amount of debt that has been accrued in relation to this war, that's on top of everything else we have already accrued, presumably an American defeat in that part of the world would result in an absolute crisis of confidence in our government, an absolute crisis of confidence in the American dollar. To what extent do you think that such a calamity would precipitate the unloading of the American dollar on the part of countries like China and Japan, which have loaned us a lot of money in regard to this whole thing? And to what extent do you think this talk about Iran developing an oil burst that would do its business in the euro rather than the dollar is also tied up in this whole situation?
Well, all of this goes back to a conference called Bretton Woods at the end of World War II, in which the dollar was basically declared to be equivalent to gold. And this was the real victory for the United States at the end of World War II, because it basically allowed the U.S. to spend dollars anywhere else in the world and have them accepted at full value, then start to print up more of them. And by means of this inflation, in effect, collected an imperial tax for having won World War II at the very end. The problem is that in order to prop up the value of the dollar, a lot of other countries have to basically hang on to them and keep them off of the world market. Otherwise, you'd have too many dollars chasing too few goods and services, and you would see the value of the dollar drop, and that would negatively impact the dollar holdings that they actually have. Now, what the United States has been facing in recent decades because of the loss of manufacturing and simply runaway government spending is they've run up a huge amount of debt that is so great that even all of the income tax we all just got done paying won't even cover the interest on it. They're making basically token payments on the interest. The principal is not being addressed. The principal continues to go up. The debt is just soaring beyond control. So I think what was being discussed in Dick Cheney's Energy Task Force, the one that we're not supposed to know anything about, is they decided that if the U.S. were to conquer the Mideast oil fields, they could turn those products from imported products to exported products because they would be under American corporate control. And even though they're outside the country physically, they would economically now be United States assets that we would be exporting to reverse the balance of trade across our borders. So this is why when the Judicial Watch Organization succeeded in prying some documents out of Dick Cheney's Energy Task Force, what they got were maps of the Mideast oil fields, because these were the targets of the energy policy. If we control the oil, we will have an exportable product. We will be able to use the oil as leverage on those countries to which we owe money to go along with our plans a little bit more. If we control the Mideast oil, we can continue to make the dollar the international oil currency of choice, which stimulates foreign demand for dollars, which keeps the value of the dollar up. So also, control of the oil is control of conventional warfighting going into the next century. So there were a lot of reasons for the U.S. to strategically think that controlling the Mideast oil was the way to basically get out of the jam that we're all in. So this is why we went into Iraq. This is why they're trying to get into Iran. This is why eventually Saudi Arabia will come under attack, because that'll basically get about 80-90% of the Mideast oil reserves under U.S. control. Now, if this operation fails, which it seems to be doing, the U.S. is saddled with even more and more debt, and having lost the myth of American military invincibility, other countries are going to say, well, you know, they lost that war against an uncivilized, rather militarily unsophisticated country. We're free to go ahead and do what's best for our country, and that would mean shifting away from the dollar and more toward the euro, which some countries are already doing. And if the oil-producing countries start accepting euros, then foreign demand for the dollar is going to drop, and that will really pull the rug out from under the value of the dollar. And we will see the dollar crash, and all of those extra dollars that the Federal Reserve has been printing up are going to start flooding back into the market, and we're going to see a hyperinflationary spiral that is going to make post-World War I Germany look like a summer picnic, because it's all a gigantic house of cards. And without that foreign oil market soaking up dollars, there are far too many dollars in circulation to sustain the value of the dollar.
Well, just looking at this from a military point of view, you know, I'm certainly not a military expert, but, you know, from what Pat Buchanan has written on this, and I was talking with Terry Arnold the other day on this show, who writes for Rents.com, and Terry has an incredible background in national security policy. We were discussing conventional troops related in a ratio related to the numbers of insurgents in these places like Iraq. I want to chat with you about that a little bit when we come back, in terms of what that may portend for the disastrous character of what Mr. Bush has had us into. This is Mark Gantos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, RBN. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit coredocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, Documents, plural, .com.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Joined today by Michael Rivero of WhatReallyHappened.com. Michael, before the break, we've been talking about all kinds of things today related to catastrophes, domestic and foreign, that Mr. Bush and others have gotten us into, and how this war in Iraq might simply mushroom into an international conflagration of just unimaginable proportions, both militarily as well as economically. The whole future of the United States in any conventional historical sense is, I think, clearly at risk in all of this. And as we think about the military dimensions, I'm struck by something that Pat Buchanan said quite some time ago when he was saying that in our National War College, the guys that are alleged experts in counterinsurgency warfare have maintained consistently that you need 10 conventional troops for every insurgent when you're occupying a country where there is a significant insurgency going on. Terry Arnold, this acknowledged national security and Middle Eastern expert that writes at Rents.com, told me the other day that many people believe that the actual ratio is 20 to 1. But whether it's 10 to 1 or it's 20 to 1, when you consider the ongoing revisions of official estimates as to how many insurgents there are in Iraq at present, and presumably how many there would be in Iran if we became involved in that catastrophe, how many conventional troops do these guys think, these neocons think, Mr. Bush think, would have to be committed to that area of the world if we were involved in a conventional occupation of that region?
Well, it's going to take millions, and I think it was a very obvious part of the plan right from the start that at some point along this rush to this clash of civilizations that the American people would support the reinstatement of the draft. And obviously this is a part of their plan which has fallen flat on its face. Military recruitment has fallen off. There is zero popular support for the return of a draft. This is why we're seeing Bush in desperation stripping this country of its National Guard units, sending them over to Iraq, extending tours of duty, repeat tours of duty. The military policy that was in effect at the time most of these soldiers enlisted has been completely rewritten to allow the government to simply send them back over and over and over again, refuse to let them go. And, of course, this is fatiguing the troops. It's destroying the morale. And there's a quote I like to point to on a pretty regular basis. It's Sun Tzu, who wrote in The Art of War that for an army to win, they must believe they have the moral law on their side. And so, of course, you're going to see the military high command always trying to tell the troops, well, there's a good reason you're here, and we're fighting for right and for justice and against al-Qaeda and blah, blah, blah. But more and more of the soldiers and sailors and airmen are seeing through that, and they realize they really are the bad guys here. And, you know, calling the Iraqi people who are opposing the occupation insurgents presupposes that the U.S. and its representatives are now the legitimate government of Iraq. And I'm sure the Nazis, when they were in France, felt much the same way about the Vichy government and viewed those French people who opposed the Vichy government as insurgents. But the reality is these are people who just wanted their home back from the invader. And so there's a very fuzzy line between what is really an insurgent versus what is an Iraqi citizen who just wants Iraq, you know, back in Iraq hands. And so this is why it's so hard to figure out who are the number of insurgents, because every Iraqi is potentially an insurgent, because except for the ones who have personally benefited by collaborating with the American invaders, the vast majority of Iraqis want the Americans out of their country.
Yes, and you know, to me, of course, like you, Michael, and a number of other people that, by God's grace, were on the right track on this thing before it even unfolded, I nonetheless point to one thing about a year after we got in March of 2003, which absolutely underscored the irresponsibility and the incompetence of the national security establishment that involved us in this mess at the behest of the president and Wolfowitz and others. CENTCOM, I don't know if you remember this or not, CENTCOM estimated in 2003 that there were 5,000 insurgents in Iraq. I don't know how they arrived at that figure, where they got it, but that at one point was proclaimed either by the head of CENTCOM or one of his underlings as the official story as to how many insurgents our kids were dealing with. Exactly 1 year later, approximately 1 year later, I came across a CENTCOM press release that indicated at this juncture that they believe that 20,000 insurgents existed in Iraq, which was an increase of fourfold in just 12 months. Either these guys obviously didn't get it right the first time, or our policies in that country produced a fourfold increase in insurgents in 12 months. Whatever it is, it seems to me to be very clear that we don't know how many insurgents there are in that country, and presumably, whether we're dealing with Shiites or we're dealing with Sunnis or we're dealing with Kurds, there would seem to be, whatever the animosities between those three groups historically, there would seem to be a very strong commitment on the part of all three to getting the United States and Britain out of there. Is that a fair assessment?
I would absolutely agree with that, with the additional proviso that I think a lot of the so-called factional strife are, again, false flag attacks, because I think it's now become the policy of the United States and Great Britain to try and get the Iraqis into killing each other off in order to delay unification against the current occupation. I don't know if your listeners will remember this, but shortly after the start of the war, there were some British SAS soldiers who were caught with explosives and Arab clothing attempting to blow up a police station, and the police arrested them, and the British were so terrified of the story getting any more public play, they literally attacked the police station, I think it was in Basra, to break
yes.
these two guys out. And there have been some additional cases since then of ordinary Iraqis are pulled over at a checkpoint. They're taken away from their car to have their papers checked. They come back and say, well, you have to go to the police station to get your driver's license back. They start driving off. They hear a funny noise, and they check their car, and they find it wired with explosives. So a lot of this so-called factional strife appears to be intentional false flag attacks to try and keep the Shi'i and the Sunni fighting against each other. But I think they're beginning to see through that dodge, And this is why, you know, forget the rest of Iraq. The U.S. is barely hanging on to Baghdad. They're weathering attacks inside the so-called green zone. They're trying to build these walls to limit movement. But obviously the forces against them are magnifying. The U.S. cannot commit any more troops absent a draft, and right now, going into the 2008 elections, a draft is an absolute election loser issue to raise its time. So, you know, I think there's a very real possibility that we're going to have a Saigon moment in Baghdad where the U.S. is simply going to bail out with a bunch of people dangling underneath a helicopter.
Well, that's right, and I think back to April of 1975. I was in college at that time at Valparaiso University. My dad by that time was out of Vietnam. He had retired from the Air Force in 73, and he was in Iran serving the Shah's Air Force. But in April of 75, when I saw those helicopters lifting off of the roof of the American embassy, I just had a very sick feeling, that, boy, we lost 58,000 lives, not to mention the number of American lives that were ruined because of physical injuries and psychological and psychiatric damage. But then considering, of course, as well, the number of people that we killed in that conflict. And it all came down to the fact that we finally had to pull out. You know, as I think about that, what makes my blood boil is that Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney, of course, are older than I am. Presumably, these guys should know something about relatively recent history. I mean, this whole disaster that culminated in April of 75 is only a little bit more than 30 years ago. And yet, nonetheless, for the second time in my brief lifetime, the national leadership of the United States, in my view, has taken our kids and taken our country into an unwinnable war of counterinsurgency in the third world that is, A, unwinnable, and B, like Vietnam, conducted under false pretenses. It's absolutely incredible to me that this kind of a mistake could be made again, and that really, in the beginning, there was absolute congressional acquiescence in this, and the American people in the beginning of this whole situation just seemed to be comatose. Are we going to see folks being more proactive the next time?
Well, I certainly hope so, but getting back to why the mistake is being repeated, you have to look at our national leadership and realize that very few of them actually served in uniform in combat. President Bush got to fly jets all over Texas during Vietnam. Colin Powell, of course, is no longer with the government precisely because he was the voice of caution and reason that, you know, it's easy to make all kinds of grand-sounding plans before a war, but once the war is underway, anything can happen. So we have a war president and a war leadership that have not themselves actually served in war and seen the reality. They've been the victims of countless sales pitches by various military contractors and the Pentagon saying that we've mastered the art of urban guerrilla counterinsurgency. And obviously, as we are seeing in Iraq, a lot of those plans and expectations and war games really have not worked out at all. That in point of fact, we're facing the same sort of difficulty with an urban counterinsurgency that we fought in Vietnam. And we're doing just about as well with it. We have an enemy that refuses to wear uniforms. We have an enemy that is basically using the same strategy against us that the colonials used against the British. And it proves very, very effective, especially when the enemy that you or the occupier, the invader that you're fighting against, they're just there for money or for duty to country, and you're fighting against an insurgency or freedom fighters, if you prefer, who are fighting for their homes and loved ones that are right there within eye, with eye distance. They can see what they're fighting for right there, and that really gives them an energy and an intensity that the invading troops simply cannot match, even with all their technological prowess. And again, this is the mistake that Hitler made in World War II. He thought his wonderful machines were going to win the war for him, that the troops just had to push the buttons and operate the gears, and everything would be fine. And it didn't work out that way because the German troops knew they were an invading, conquering force, whereas the people that they were invading were fighting for their own very homes. And that puts a dynamic on the field that technology really cannot overcome.
Well, I think that's an absolutely essential point, Michael, and it brings us back to your old friend Sun Tzu in his book, The Art of War. I remember one quotation from that book. He says something to the effect of war are moral contests that are won in the temples before they're ever fought. And if you look at what Sun Tzu says there in that instance and then look at what's at stake here, as the Shiites and Sunnis see it in Iraq, and compare that with the agenda that we went into this war with, quite clearly it would seem to me that in terms of fervor, staying power, stamina, ideological and philosophical commitment in belief systems and so forth, that this is where they have an absolute advantage over us. And presumably their great sophistication in the art of asymmetrical warfare, taken in tandem with that philosophical fervor, spells big trouble for us as the superior conventional power that is showing all the signs of going the way that we did in Southeast Asia, the way that the Israelis did in southern Lebanon in the early 80s, the way the French did in Algeria, and the way that the Soviet Union did in Afghanistan.
Well, it's key to keep in mind right now that even with all the military spending the U.S. is doing, that what is really becoming a factor is that all of the stockpiled weapon systems, tanks, airplanes, everything that we had at the start of the war are beginning to wear out. It's a very tough climate. The sand gets into everything. Machinery is wearing out. It's not being replaced. The U.S. has been so reckless with shooting everything that moves, we're now having to buy ammunition from Israel because we've run out of stockpiles of our own ammunition with the Defense Department. So we're really running to the end of our material support here, and Bush is trying to figure out a way to get the American people to swallow more taxes, to pay for more bullets and bombs, and the American people are saying enough is enough. It's the same old problem that every government faces. To convince the people to live with less so the government can have more. And the American people are digging their heels in right now and saying, you know, enough is enough. This is a failed venture. It was we were gotten into it with a bunch of lies and deception, and we see no reason to continue going along with it. So, again, this gets back to the issue. Will the desperate parties in our government attempt another false flag to scare us into agreement with yet another invasion or with a draft? Or we're surrendering more of our freedoms and our money to support the war effort? Or are the American people going to stand up and say, no, we've really had enough? And ultimately, it's going to come down to who wants it more. If the American people want an end to war and an end to this reckless government spending, they're going to have to make it happen. And I know that at the very beginning of the anti-war movement, there was a lot of vocal active participation. Then, as Americans, the government isn't listening anymore to the people. That kind of faded off, but now we're starting to see it build again, and I think in this case it's going to build to a more confrontational.
What, I mean, let's consider this scenario, Michael. If, God forbid, there should be a false flag incident of just imaginable dimensions in this country, that presumably would be used by the powers that be to facilitate a wider war in the Middle East with this Iran in the crosshairs. What do these guys do, meaning the neocons government, what do these guys do if this false flag incident occurs, but it doesn't have the effect that the USS Maine did to precipitate the Spanish-American War? It won't have, if it doesn't have the effect that Pearl Harbor did in terms of our entrance into World War II, it doesn't have the effect that 9/11 did. What if the American public, maybe for the first time in its history, stands to this and says, we know what's going on, and you guys can take a hike? Do you think that that's a possibility?
I think it's a very real possibility, and I think the response at that time will be that Bush will use whatever the event is to where martial law and basically say, okay, we don't care if you were this or not, here's your rifle, you're going to go fight the war. And again, it's going to come down to a confrontation between the government and the people. I wish there was a peaceful way out, but it's very clear that the government has put itself on a course of action that they only have two choices, and that is to carry their plan out to completion and conquer the Middle East, or to simply lose control of the government, lose control of the country entirely. There is no third course, and for that very reason, each side sees their own survival at stake in the matter, and it's going to get very intense there toward the end. Now, with regard to a false flag attack, it doesn't have to happen necessarily inside the United States. There was a news report just a few days ago in which supposedly Al-Qaeda, whoever that actually is talking about an attack on the Roman palace, dwarfing Hiroshima. So if somebody wanted to kick off a class of civilizations, nuking the Vatican would be a good way to start a whole new religious crusade.
Boy, I tell you, that is Estonia and apocalyptic and frighteningly plausible. We'll be back with Michael Rivero. This is Mark Dankoff coming to you live from San Antonio and RBN. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of the coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance, include 4 books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
How are you preparing ahead for the event in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves and More wants to help you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you independence. You need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. These state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like grandma's old ones. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heating up 1,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, they have products for you from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24-volt refrigeration. At Stoves and More, we have a perfect product to complete your preparations. The first 10 people who purchase a stove will send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. And stovesandmoreonline.com.
Did you hear about Joe Bannister, IRS Special Agent Criminal Investigator that quit the IRS a few years ago because the IRS failed to show him the law or legal authority for ordinary Americans like you and me to file and pay income tax?
What do you mean? Everyone knows that you have to file and pay income taxes.
Well, not only did the IRS fail to show Joe Bannister all that requires you and me to file and pay income tax when Joe was working for the IRS, but even after Joe quit the IRS failed to show up to several debates that the IRS was invited to debate Bannister about the legality of the income tax.
Wow, this is amazing information. Where can I find out more about this?
Go to the website at www.livefreenow.org. That's 760-864-271. And the website is www.livefreenow.org.
Across America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Michael Rivero, and the website is whatreallyhappened.com. This is an amazing source of information, folks, and I think put it in your favorites, bookmark it. Keep looking at it as ahead because it's all this stuff begins to unfold. Michael Rivero is one of the media sources, the alternative sources that we need to rely upon to give us the inside story that we're not reading about, obviously, in the New York Times or in the London Financial Times. Tomorrow, George Cody is going to be on the show. He is the executive director of the American Task Force for Lebanon. He's going to be talking about Israeli cluster bombs in southern Lebanon and the incredible humanitarian disaster that has been created by that. He'll be on in the first hour of the show from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. And then from 8 to 9 a.m., I'm going to do some news analysis. And then our usual Friday guest, Glenn, will be with us from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. To continue with me in regard to news analysis and trying to interpret, make some sense of what's been happening in the last week or so. And in regard to police states, underscoring what Michael Rivero has already shared with us, I go back to a James Bovard's piece for Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative entitled Working for the Clampdown. He points to the 30th of September of 2006, when the Defense Authorization Act passed. Section 1076 of the John Warner National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2007 changed the name of the condition in the statute book from Insurrection Act, referring to the Insurrection Act of 1807, to the, quote, Enforcement of the Laws to Restore Public Order Act, unquote. Now, the Insurrection Act of 1807, quoting Bovard, stated that the president could deploy troops within the United States only, quote, to suppress in a state any insurrection, domestic violence, unlawful combination, or conspiracy, unquote. The new law expands the list to include, quote, natural disaster, epidemic, or other serious public health emergency, terror attack, or incident, or, get a load of this, folks, or other condition. And as James Bard points out to us, such condition is not defined or limited. We are that close to having a full-blown police state in this country. And what do you think of that in terms of a rather draconian scenario?
Well, obviously, the legal groundwork is being laid for Bush to respond to popular dissent, if you will, with force. And at some point, as I said earlier, we're heading toward more confrontational time, where we're going to have anti-war protesters in force marching through the middle of Washington, D.C., and Bush will use this modified law in order to send the troops to basically disperse them. Again, we saw this back in the city, and it culminated with the Kent State Massacre. And again, the government is right now fearful of its own legitimacy, because a government that lies to its people to send them off to war is acting illegal and unconstitutionally, and the American people are going to say at some point, why should we be listening to you anymore? And at that point, they're going to start waving swords at us.
Yes. It's coming, folks. I'm absolutely convinced that it is, and I think Michael Rivero has given us some qualitative data today that underscores just how close we are. I'd like to thank Michael for being on Mark Gantz America, which has come to you today live from San Antonio, Texas, on RBN. Michael's site again is whatreallyhappened.com. Tomorrow, Judge Cody of the American Task Force Lebanon will be on from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m., and then Mark Glenn of Cross and the American Free Press will join me from 9 a.m. to 10 o'clock in the Central Time. God bless you. See you tomorrow. I